The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable John W. Turner presiding.
Thank you. Good afternoon, counselors.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
We are here. Good afternoon. Thank you. We're here on case number 4220827, and that's Kuhn versus Owners Insurance Company and others. For the appellant, we have Mr. Connor Dugan, and for the appellee, apparently there are two attorneys that will be arguing. That would be Kara Lindsay Rakers and Terrence B. Kelly. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that would be 10 minutes apiece?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. And having said that then, Mr. Dugan, you may proceed with your argument.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I am Connor Dugan on behalf of Owners Insurance. I'd like to begin by trying to just distill this case down to its essence. This ultimately is not a case that it's about a battle of different case law. It's about the specific language of the insurance policy here and what that policy said. And I think a good way to frame it is to ask, what did Jason Farrell Trucking and Jason Farrell and Owners Insurance understand they were bargaining to when they entered into this policy? What did the parties reasonably believe they were agreeing to with respect to primary liability insurance when they entered into this? And so let me just kind of use the facts of this particular case. Would Jason Farrell Trucking have believed when it was in an accident with a 2010 Kenworth and every other covered auto in this case was 150 miles away in Clinton, Iowa, would he have understood that he could access coverage for all seven of those? Or would he have understood that he could access coverage for the vehicle that was involved in the accident? And the answer is, the only reasonable interpretation is that he would have thought he was entitled to coverage for the vehicle that was involved in it. So in the briefing, Your Honor, I've thrown a lot of case law around, but I think ultimately all of those cases stand for the basic proposition that each case or each policy is reviewed on a case-by-case basis. And we looked at that particular policy to ask whether or not there's ambiguity in its language. And so I would focus this court on this policy and its language. And I would just walk the court briefly through. And I think the best place to sort of look is actually in the appellee's appendix, because they had a supplemental appendix that has the policy, and that's probably the most user-friendly. But if one starts with item two, which is the second piece of the declaration pages, at the top there, it talks about the limit of insurance and says that there's a $1 million limit for each accident. And then if one turns to item three, one sees that, again, for hired autos, there's a $1 million amount for each accident. That's on their page six of their supplemental. And then that's repeated as to the seven covered autos. If that wasn't clear enough, then we turn to the limit of insurance provision. And I think that's where the rubber meets the road. And that's on page 21 and 22 of the supplemental appendix. But the limit of insurance begins with a statement saying we will pay damages for bodily injury, property damage, up to the limit of insurance shown in the declarations for this coverage. Then right below that in C1, it says when combined liability limits are shown in the declarations, the limit shown for each accident is the total amount of coverage and the most we will pay for damages because of or arising out of bodily injury, property damage in any one accident. And if that were not clear, then we turn to C5 on the next page, which says the limit of insurance for this coverage may not be added to the limits for the same or similar coverage applying to other autos insured by this policy to determine the amount of coverage available for any one accident, regardless of the number of covered autos, insureds, premiums paid, claims made, or suits brought, persons injured, or vehicles involved. And so So the reasonable interpretation of that language and that what that Jason Farrell Trucking would have understood is that if it had one vehicle involved in an accident. The limit of its insurance would be that which is listed out in the declarations. And it doesn't matter if you have seven vehicles insured under the policy or 25, that it's limited to what the limit is stated there. And I think it's kind of it's telling that in the briefing, the appellees really try to assiduously avoid even discussing Section 2C5. And they don't provide an alternative reading because they think it's pretty straightforward. The other piece I would say, Your Honors, that even if there was any sort of question about the declaration pages causing some sort of question in the mind of Jason Farrell Trucking, any confusion at all would be resolved by the limits of insurance provisions. And, you know, there are three cases in our briefing that I would point this court to. First, this district's court case back in 2001, Pekin Insurance, where it said even if there could be some confusion arising out of whether the coverages could be stacked, it said the limitation provision clarifies that question. And Stripling, which is a case from the second district, 2004, it talks about how the policy has to be read as a whole. And that's why all the provisions are read together. So even if there were a question looking at the deck pages, you look at this limitation. And then finally, there's the McFadden case out of the second district too, which actually uses Judge Easterbrook's language about the disambiguator language. That is what a standing stacking provision does. So even if you have questions, which I would say that they shouldn't be here from the declarations pages, the anti-stacking provision clears that all up. And so at the end of the day, I think the only reasonable interpretation of this policy is that Jason Farrell Trucking entered into a contract that gave him combined liability limits up to $1 million. It's nonsensical to think that one truck that was involved in it would suddenly be able to scoop in six other vehicles that had nothing to do with the accident. So if there aren't any questions, Your Honors, I would simply ask this court to reverse and remand for an entry of declaratory judgment in our favor because of the reasonable interpretation of this insurance policy, which stands for the proposition, the anti-stacking provision stands for the proposition that you cannot stack these various liability coverages.
Mr. Dugan, if it is so clear, how did the trial court get it wrong here?
It's a great question, Your Honor. I think part of it is that it was focusing very heavily on the underinsured and uninsured motorist cases. And there is a clear distinction between those cases and combined liability cases or primary liability. And all but I think two of the cases cited by the appellees in this case are uninsured or underinsured cases. And it makes sense that those might be treated differently by Illinois courts because uninsured and underinsured motorist benefits flow with the person. Primary liability flows with the automobile. And in fact, you can even see that in our policy because the uninsured and underinsured provisions and the separate limitation provisions are in endorsements that are on pages, let me just get you that, on pages 37 and 38 and 40 of their supplemental appendix. So I think a lot of it had to do with that and losing focus that it needed to focus on this particular language in this policy, because there's certainly undeniably many cases in the underinsured context that have allowed stacking. But again, that would make sense given that those particular sorts of benefits flow with the person. And if the justices have no more questions, I'll come back on rebuttal.
All right. I see no questions, and you will have rebuttal. Mr. Kelly, are you going first or Ms. Rakers?
Ms. Rakers is going first, Your Honor.
And please proceed then. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. Council has done his best in his briefing and here today to direct this court's attention away from Bruder and the cases that followed. But unfortunately for council, he can't escape the law. Owners could have made this policy very clear, but did not do so. The law on stacking is clear. We do not have to turn to any other states. I think it makes sense to briefly look at the language in the owner's policy. And for the court's reference, again, that owner's deck page is on the appendix in our brief, page A4. And just quickly, you'll see that there are 7 vehicles covered. And for each vehicle, the 1 million limit is listed each time. The owner's anti-stacking clause, or this limit of liability clause, is set forth on pages A21 and 22 of our appendix. You'll see the very first line of 2C directs the reader to the deck pages for the specific dollar amount. You'll also see that owners attempts to limit coverage regardless of the number of covered autos, insureds, premiums paid, claims paid or suits brought, persons injured or vehicles involved. And this same language will be found in many of the Illinois policies we're going to talk about today. So looking at the Illinois law, and I won't go through it in great detail because it's in our briefs, but we have to talk about Bruder, the Illinois Supreme Court case.
Ms. Rakers, may I interrupt you for
absolutely.
A moment? And you indicated that owners could have made this much simpler, much clearer in its policy. And specifically as the declarations page, I think you're saying here, putting the actual policy aside, the form policy, but focusing on sections 2 and 3 of the declarations pages. It looks like owners wanted to provide in section 2 a summary of the coverage, and in section 3 to spell out what the individual coverages included in the premiums for each of those. If owners wanted to provide this more detailed information for the policyholder, in other words, for each of the vehicles setting forth what coverage was being provided and the premium for each, are you saying it could have been done in a clearer way if it also wished to provide the summary and total premiums, which it did in item 2? And if so, how would they have done so?
Sure. I mean, I think that there are several ways that owners could have made this policy more clear. I mean, based on the case law, listing the limits each time is a problem. And the bigger problem for owners is that there are conflicts between item 2 and item 3. Owners uses the term limit in the singular, uses the term limits in the plural, and our brief goes into more detail in that. Again, you get to the title section 2C, which is the limit of liability. We're back to the singular limit, combined limits plural later. And so I think that it's confusing, but more so, had they just listed it once and they said, it's $1 million, that's what you get for the vehicle. In the limit of liability, and there are cases on this too, Oberland is one of them, just put in there the dollar amount instead of referring the reader back to the declaration pages.
Can I ask you about that?
Sure.
Where would they have put the dollar amount here? Are you saying in the form itself?
In the limit of liability section is where I think, again, if we go to the Oberland case, I can get the site for you, but they did just that. Instead of saying the coverage shown in the declarations, it said the $1 million or whatever the dollar amount was, so that the reader doesn't have to go between the deck pages and the limit of liability to try to figure out what the coverage is.
But the limit of liability, where would that be included here in this case? You're talking about the policy itself, right?
I am.
Well, so I'm just curious. I'm not sure that I've seen a policy. A policy is a form that is written. Here it's a commercial auto policy, a form that is written to be used with multiple insurance customers, right?
Sure.
And the declarations pages sets forth the individual coverages for the individual customer. But you're saying that owners here should have included an actual dollar amount in terms of a limit within the form. It would have had to have modified its commercial auto policy to actually include a dollar figure. Is that right?
I think that that is one way to do it per Oberlin, which is a 1992 first district case. I don't think it's the only way to do it. I mean, if we go back to Bruder and all the cases that follow, Gobin, Yates, Johnson, Bowers, Cherry, Barlow, I mean, they all talk about how listing the individual limits can really confuse a limit of liability or an anti-stacking clause.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Sure. So I just wanted to briefly talk about this disambiguator that counsel has referred to. And he takes the position that it can take away the ambiguity of a deck page, an anti-stacking clause can. And he cites Judge Easterbrook and Grinnell for this position. But that position is simply wrong. Per Bruder, on page 91 of the Bruder decision, it's a deck page can make what appears to be a clear anti-stacking clause ambiguous. And this has been confirmed time and time again by Illinois appellate courts and the Illinois Supreme Court. Again, we have Gobin that had the same anti-stacking language, trying to limit it to certain vehicles, certain claims, regardless of the number of people involved. It referred the reader to the deck page for the actual dollar amount. The deck page then had two vehicles that had limits listed for each one. And the court in Gobin noted that this fell directly within what Bruder contemplated. The deck pages rendered the anti-stacking clause ambiguous, and stacking was permitted. The same thing happened in Yates. Stacking was allowed, referred to the Bruder dicta, despite the anti-stacking language and because of the deck page. We then have Skidmore in 2001, which was this involved the stacking of at-fault limits, not UIM, not UM. And again, it has the same anti-stacking language that we see in Owners and Gobin and Bruder. It refers the reader to the deck pages. And then when you go to the deck pages, it lists the limit for each vehicle, which creates ambiguity. Bruder was applied in Skidmore, and the stacking of the at-fault limits were allowed. Then the Illinois Supreme Court speaks up in Hobbs and distinguishes the Hobbs anti-stacking clauses on page 27 of our brief, similar limitation language, refers to the deck page. And then the deck page on page 18 of our brief, you'll notice the limits are listed just once, not for each vehicle. And so stacking was not allowed. But significantly, the court states it wouldn't be difficult to find an ambiguity had the coverage limits been listed for each vehicle. In other words, Hobbs recognizes that Yates, cases like Yates, properly allow stacking where the limits are listed. And I see that I just have a couple minutes left. So we have the Johnson, Bowers, Cherry, Barlow, all of those cases have similar language. Even Hess, Your Honors, the Illinois Supreme Court case that counsel likes to rely on in his briefing, actually affirms Bruder. There were the same anti-stacking language that we've been talking about, and the deck page is two pages, but it's four vehicles listed across the two pages. They simply wouldn't all fit. And so the owner's deck page is not like the one in Hess. The Hess court relied on both Bruder and Hobbs and found that there was no ambiguity, that there were multiple deck pages because of the number of vehicles, not because it was listing the limits each time.
Ms. Rakers, my question and your answer will likely go into your past the limit of your time, and I'm going to ask my colleagues' indulgence if I could ask this question. At page four of your client's brief, You point out that owners, for the first time in the declaratory judgment action, cites to subsection 2C3, and that's the limit of insurance section, specifically dealing with the attachment of a trailer. Do you remember that?
I do, Your Honor.
The brief. Putting aside whether or not owners raised that argument in the trial court, I just, after reading that section, and that section, it would prevent adding an attached trailer's $1 million coverage to the truck's $1 million here. Would you agree with that? That would be the effect of applying 2C3?
So you cut out a little bit, Your Honor. I'm sorry at the last part of what you said, but I know what you're referring to. It's the limit of liability provides that the car and the trailer are considered one vehicle. That's what it's trying to do.
Right. And so let me, so that you hear the question, then let me repeat it.
Sure.
So would you agree that the application of section 2C3 would limit the liability coverage in a situation where you have a tractor with an attached trailer to $1 million in coverage, because that section would not allow for the trailer's $1 million coverage to be added, to be stacked, in other words? Is that right?
So I think that's what they're trying to do. I don't know that I would agree that that's what it does. The trailer exclusion itself, I think, makes the policy ambiguous. If you look at C3 and C4, it's trying to limit coverage, but then the deck page provides separate coverage for a trailer. And so why list out all the coverages for the vehicles, a separate coverage for the trailer, and then later in the policy say, well, these are combined and considered as one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your argument. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Justice. Again, Terry Kelly for Appalee, Steve Price. Somewhat ironic in my mind that counsel for the appellant believes that issues are very simple here when it did take the trial court 73 pages to go through all the various arguments raised by the parties, including the interpretation of all the various provisions at play here, as well as the various case law. But as it is, I actually agree with counsel that the issue here is rather straightforward and simple. Course, for different reasons, and I believe that the trial court got it right in its very considered, very detailed analysis. I think that the issue here is very, very, very simple, and that is, does this case fall within the Bruta dicta? If it falls within the Bruta dicta, then the policy is ambiguous and stacking must be allowed, because we always interpret policies in a light most favorable to the insured or to against the insurer when policies are ambiguous. So that's really the sum and substance of it. And to respond further to Justice Harris's question, how could owners had drafted this policy to avoid the results that we're at here now? Very, very simple. Follow the Bruder majority opinion, where you do not list multiple liability limits for all the various policies autos insured. It's very simple. Bruder specifically stated where there's a single limit of liability listed in a deck page, regardless of the fact that there might be multiple premiums listed, but where there's a single policy limit listed, we find no ambiguity, and we find that we can apply the anti-stacking clause as written. But then we go on to the Bruder dicta, right? Where it specifically states, and I would respond to Mr. Dugan's comment question about how would Farrell interpret this policy, and I would suggest A reasonable way for him to interpret this policy is exactly what the Supreme Court said in its dicta. And that is, quote, it would not be difficult to find an ambiguity created by such listing of liability, injury liability limits for each person insured if there were multiple limits of liability listed. It goes on to state, it could easily be interpreted that an insured should enjoy a total of $200,000 in coverage because a figure of $100,000 would be shown for each pickup truck. There would be little to suggest, and it's such a listing, that the parties intended that the coverage was to be limited to that provided for only one of the two pickup trucks. It would be more reasonable to assume that the parties intended that, in return for the two premiums, two $100,000 coverage amounts were afforded. Then it goes on to state, but that is not this case. So in Bruder, the insurer wisely only listed liability limits one time. I would submit to you that the insurers were on notice statewide in the state of Illinois that that's the way you ought to do it if you want to avoid stacking limits. In fact, that's the only way, from my review of the last 30 years of case law, for stacking to be applied is when you apply multiple limits or list multiple limits for each vehicle insured under a single policy. That's how owners could have avoided it. And the Supreme Court of Illinois says it would have been reasonable for Mr. Farrell to conclude that by listing seven different limits for seven different vehicles, that he got those each individual limits applicable to the loss. That's what a reasonable interpretation is under Bruder. So the only question is, and as we know, we can go through all the various case law, but the Bruder dicta is in essence the rule of the law of the lands here in Illinois. We've had how many appellate court cases adopt that in the specific factual scenario here? We've listed all of them for the court: Yates, Skidmore, Johnson, Packer, Bowers, Cherry, Barlow. There's federal courts that have filed it too: Allen and Kovac. They've all followed the terms of the Bruder decision. The only question is, does this fall within the Bruder dicta? And guess what? It does to a T. It exactly follows the Bruder dicta. They, in their policy, list clear as day $1 million policy limits for each individual policy. So that's how they could have avoided it. They also could have avoided terms that limited the coverage to the specific accident or specific vehicle involved in the accident, as other policies have found that did not allow stacking. I do want to make a comment on Mr. Dugan's statements about how liability coverage follows the vehicle, whereas UM coverage does not. That is actually not an entirely accurate statement. It's more nuanced than that, but it doesn't matter, quite frankly. One thing I would state in that regard, in their reply brief, appellants cite a slew of out-of-state courts that have not allowed stacking and liability coverage. And I would first submit to you that I think it's an improper on rebuttal because we never addressed that. They never addressed that issue in their primary brief, nor did we address it in our response. And I think it goes beyond the necessary rebuttal that's allowed under the rules. But more to the point, it did not give us an opportunity to respond to those arguments. If we had an opportunity to respond, I would cite to other cases in other jurisdictions that have allowed stacking for liability cases, such as Goodman versus Allstate Insurance, 523 New York 2nd, which is New York Court of Appeals, as well as two Missouri cases, Shelter Mutual Insurance Company versus Lester, 554 and Southwest 2nd, 376. And there's another one as well. The point is that the issue really comes down to the individual interpretation of the policy. But to go to the point of whether or not liability coverage follows the vehicle, yes, it does. So does UAM coverage and UM coverage. It's statutory mandated that any policy issued covering a vehicle must include UM and UIM coverage, just like it's statutorily mandated that every vehicle, every insurance policy covering a vehicle has liability coverage. They're two sides of the same coin. They're both intended to provide protection to injured parties caused by the negligence of motorists who might be uninsured or have adequate insurance. Both part of it. And both are also follow the vehicle, but they also are what we call portable and not necessarily. For instance, liability coverage can follow the insured, such as when you're not using your own vehicle. For instance, all of you have been to the airport and you've checked the box when you rent a car that says I'm declining Hertz's rental car coverage because I have some myself. Well, your coverage on your car back home covers you while you're driving that third party. In fact, owner's policy specifically covers non-owned vehicles, meaning it follows their insured if they're using someone else's vehicle in the course of their policy. So it is portable. It also follows the vehicle, just like UIM coverage is portable. It follows the individual, but it also follows the policy. Anyone or follows the auto, anyone in an insured vehicle has that coverage. So it's more nuanced than what they suggest. But more importantly, what I would suggest to you, that whatever differences exist there are not reasons to allow or not allow stacking. It's always determined on what the policy provides. Neither a policy can unambiguously limit the availability of multiple coverages or it doesn't. And that's exactly what the court in Skidmore said when it was dealing with liability coverage, where it said specifically the terms of Bruder and our analysis of whether or not the policy is ambiguous based on the same policy language applies equally to liability coverage and to UIM coverage because they're the same language. It just applies to different coverage that makes no difference to treat them differently. That's the proper analysis here. And as I said, the analysis under Bruder, they lose. There's simply no way to get around the Bruder dicta that this falls squarely within. There are all the anti-stacking clauses as, I'm not sure about my time. Do I have a clock on here?
You had 2 minutes just a short time ago. You probably have a little bit more time, but finish up your argument.
Thank you.
You are officially now out of time, but please finish your argument.
I appreciate it. I was just going to reiterate Ms. Raker's statements to the fact that under Bruder, it is not a it is the declarations page multiple listing of liability limits that creates the ambiguity that the anti-stacking clause cannot overcome. That's essentially what Bruder held, and that's certainly what all of the subsequent cases following Bruder have held, particularly Cherry specifically makes mention that the anti-stacking clause cannot overcome the ambiguity created by multiple listing of liability coverage in the deck page for each of the vehicles involved. So you can't, you have to look first at the deck page and determine whether or not it creates that expectation of coverage as they did here with owners and as they did in Yates and Skidmore and Johnson and all the other ones. And if they do, is there possibly a deck page that or an anti-stacking clause that can overcome that? And I would suggest to you Skidmore is the only case that addressed that head on and specifically stated that there you had a exclusions or a limitation on coverage that specifically applied to that situation where it states where there are none of the vehicles covered under this policy are involved in the accident. Only the highest limit will apply. That's as clear as it can be. And that's the only way to avoid the Bruder dicta. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument. Is there any rebuttal? And I would suggest Mr. Doogie might want to comment on the Bruder case.
Since yes, no, Your Honor, there is rebuttal, and that was going to be my first point. Opposing counsels discuss Bruder as if it was the last thing said 30 years ago, and they forget about Hobbs from the Illinois Supreme Court, which said, our discussion of Bruder and Yates should not be construed as establishing a per se rule that an insurance policy will be deemed ambiguous as to the limits of liability anytime the limits are noted more than once on the declarations. Variances in policy language, and in particular, anti-stacking clauses frequently require case-by-case review. And that's the point that we would bring the court back to here. That and Strickland, too, Illinois Court of Appeals case also discussed how there is not a per se rule. So Bruder did not establish some sort of, through its dicta, some sort of rule that anytime vehicles are listed separately on a deck page, that suddenly makes things ambiguous. And if anything, you have to look at the language. And here, each one of the listings of our vehicles talks about the limit, $1 million each accident. And I wanted to just briefly touch on Justice Harris's questions about the C3 provision, about the trailer. And the trailer, if a trailer is being used with one of the vehicles, that provision would be nonsensical if you could then suddenly, if the trailer is not in use with the vehicle, aggregate the trailer's limits with the vehicle that was actually in use.
Excuse me, Mr. Dugan, I think Ms. Rakers would say, and I believe this is what she was saying in response to my question, that just as 2C5 does not save the policy from stacking, neither does 2C3. What would you say to that?
Well, I would first say that I think that both provisions are clear. You asked, that was another piece I was going to get to, Justice Harris. You asked about how owners could have made this policy clear. And Ms. Rakers had a few suggestions, but I don't know that she ever said, she never said that this is totally ambiguous. She said that and that's one of the things that the case law makes clear. Just because something could be done in a more straightforward fashion or a clearer manner does not make something ambiguous. And here, what I would go back to with the declaration pages is how frequently it's emphasized that there's a $1 million limit. They say, well, that makes it ambiguous. Our argument would be, no, that actually doesn't cause any confusion. It underscores the idea that is then reinforced in C5 and C3 that you have a limit to the amount that you can have for any one accident. I would just also say that in many of the cases, Gobin, Cherry, Skidmore, there was different language being used in the anti-stacking provisions. And that's one of the points that I would come back to, is that the court should focus on the anti-stacking language here, not the anti-stacking language that might have come up in a different case. And when the court does that, it will come to the conclusion that the only reasonable interpretation here is that the limits of liability were set at $1 million. And with that, yes.
May I ask you another question?
Sure.
I had asked, I believe it was when I was asking Ms. Raker's questions, I was asking about the suggestion in her brief that the policy could have included an actual figure for liability coverage, a liability limit. And the trial court at page 27 of its order, it stated the same thing. It said that the court notes that simply defining in section 2C what the limit of insurance for the policy is by writing that it is $1 million per accident would potentially have removed any claim of ambiguity. And I'm confused by this. It would seem that what's being suggested is that the policy itself, which is used from insured to insured, underwriting creates the policy. The deck pages are what are specific to the individuals. But what's being suggested is that the policy itself would be customized on a per insured basis to include the amount of liability coverage. Is that how we're to interpret what the trial court wrote at page 27 of its order? And it Would that be appropriate?
Well, Your Honor, that's how I read the trial court as well, that that is one way that we could have cleared up the ambiguities it found. I thought when you were asking Ms. Rakers about this and talking about the distinction between policy language, which is sort of taken off the shelf in all of these cases and used over and over again, and the deck pages, I thought you were getting at the heart of why the conclusion of the trial court was maybe misguided. Not the couldn't be done. I suppose that in every policy, the insurers could do a replace and find, but that you know that would add more complexity to the whole process. And you were right to focus on this being sort of off the shelf language that is reused over and over again. And it didn't need to here because it said that regardless of the number of covered autos, it's limited to the limit of insurance. So. Thank you for that question. I know I'm over time, but I'd answer any more if there were other questions.
Justice Harris, did that sufficiently answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I see no other questions. Thanks to all three of you for your arguments. The case is submitted and the court now stands in recess.